Everybody, every time I hear my intro song, I have to tell you, regardless of how I'm feeling, it always puts a big smile on my face. So hi, everybody. I'm Beatty Cohn-Vredos, and welcome again, my friends, to the Ask Beatty Show. And for those of you who may be tuning in for the very first time, and you're wondering who is Beatty Cohn-Vredos and what is the Ask Beatty Show about, I am a psychotherapist, yes, one of those, and a sex therapist. I'm also the author of the groundbreaking book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. And this book is only for people who are really, really serious about finding healthy, lasting love, because what the book is about is my research. And I did research with 450 people in the Providence, Connecticut, and Boston area. And I devised a 10-step formula that teaches all of us how to assess who is right for you and who is wrong for you before committing to any serious relationship. And my formula, I used to complain that it wasn't romantic enough, but my formula actually, it changes the way that we all look at relationships forever. It educates, and God knows we all need a lot of education when it comes to relationships and marriage and love. And it empowers us. And that is something that this show really, really focuses on, is empowerment. Whether or not we're talking about our physical health or we're talking about our mental health. And above all, the formula keeps us safe. And the other interesting thing that I found, although I was very upset about the findings initially, was that it actually takes about a year to find out who somebody is and who somebody is not. And you cannot fast forward the process. Obviously, if you're seeing a lot of red flags, you are not going to stay in a relationship where there is abuse of any kind, if there's no communication, no problem solving, where you're with a partner who has absolutely no understanding of what real emotional intimacy is. But this formula, I'm still so proud of the work that I did, because it has saved thousands and thousands of people from really making big, big mistakes in their lives. Although the other truth is that I think that we're looking at relationships, certainly in this country, and particularly marriage, where we're really not doing very well at all. After all, the divorce rate for first marriages is 48%. For second marriage, that statistic is 67%. And one would hope and one would think that if you're marrying for the third time or the fourth time, that you are actually going to learn something. But the divorce statistic for third marriages actually happens to be 74%. And I like to tell the story of a caller who was in Providence, who called me on my call-in counseling radio talk show a number of years ago. And he said to me, he said, you know, Beatty, I have been married three times. And I said, okay, let's hear what happened. What were the dynamics in all of your marriages? So he told me he was married to a blonde, and then he was married to a brunette, and then he was married to a redhead. But in talking in depth with this man about his marriages, he really could have stayed with the blonde, because the dynamics that did not work in marriage number one also did not work in marriage number two or in marriage number three. But, you know, when I'm talking about empowerment and being good to ourselves and doing things that are in our best interest, you know, I'm looking at a number of my patients. I have a private practice here in very hot and humid New York City and also in East Hampton. And, you know, what really strikes me is how so frequently we really, really get in our own way. So I refer to getting in our own way at times about having skeletons in our closet. and our own unfinished business. And I think the first thing that we really need to do is that we need to acknowledge that we have some issues that we need to sort out. It is so easy to blame him, and it is so easy to blame her without really looking at ourselves. And if we're talking about relationship, looking at what part we are playing in our very disappointing and very dysfunctional relationships. And it takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of courage. And I think also a lot of heartache and a lot of crises before most people are really wanting and willing to look into themselves. And we also need to be willing to examine our issues and give ourselves permission, not only to talk about them, but to really emotionally work through. And of course, typically our issues begin in our own family of origin, to look at what happened and what didn't happen and what the patterns of behavior are that we are continuing with that are simply not working and are simply not in our best interest. The other thing, you know, people will say, well, we can't change history. Well, that is true. We cannot change anything that happens even a second ago. But we do have a responsibility to ourselves. If we want to have a happy life and a good life with a partner or without a partner, to really emotionally work through the things that continue to get in the way of our lives and relationships. And if you're finding that you are really up against a block and you don't know what to do, the very best thing that you can do is reach out and find yourself a really good qualified therapist. And I might add that all therapists are not the same, so you have to go through an assessment process also if you are deciding to work with a doctor or a therapist. You know, the other thing that we need to stop doing when things are not going well is we need to stop beating ourselves up and blaming ourselves for mistakes that we have made. I see so many people, and I've seen so many people over the past 35 years, they beat themselves up and they blame themselves. And yet, to take that pivot and to make some fundamental changes within themselves, that is a great challenge, and it's a great challenge for all of us. But I think that the bottom line is that we all make lots and lots and lots of mistakes in our lives. And one of my favorite taglines is lessons to be learned. What have we learned from our bad choices? What have we learned about our diet, about our health, from things that have gone wrong in our life? And that's really the great thing about being able to move forward, is that hopefully we're learning something and we're going to be able to move forward in all facets of our life in a much, much, much more productive way. So, for example, you know, you may be dealing or you may have been experiencing depression and anxiety and substance abuse and sexual abuse, including early child sexual abuse and relationship issues. And you're struggling, and you've been struggling for 1 year and 10 years. And I see people in my practice who've been struggling for 35 years. And then there comes a point in time, and this is the first question, you know, when people contact me for therapy, the first question that I need to know is whether they are serious, whether they're going to be serious students and willing to really do the work. And unfortunately, the work is not like going to a tea party. You have to really dig in and look at yourself and look at your life. And the process at times is extremely painful. But the payoff is absolutely amazing, is that once people are really committing to do the work, it really changes. It changes the fabric. It changes the trajectory of your life forever. So are you willing, whether it's depression, whether or not it's domestic violence or unfortunate and unhappy relationship issues that you may have been dealing with or really not dealing with for years and years and years, the real question is this. Are you willing now, we can't change yesterday, to acknowledge, address, and resolve things as best as we can? And when you go through that process, certainly people who go through that process with me, finally, they are able, and sometimes for the very first time in their lives, to be able to live in the moment, to live in the present, rather than having one foot in the past and one foot in the present. So I always love to hear from you. And the call-in number here is 888-874-4888. Well, for the next part of this show, we are going to be talking about sex. And I'm going to introduce my amazing guest, who I'm actually dying to meet in person. We'll have to certainly make some arrangements to do that, Diana DeBay. But before we start talking with Diana, I want to give you some perspective on what is going on in this country when it comes to sex. So how are men and women really, really doing in the bedroom? After all, we live in this highly sexualized society, and there's porn and there's chat rooms and sexting, and it goes on and on, especially with all the technology. Well, let me tell you something. There was a very significant study done at Pittsburgh Western Psychiatric Hospital. And it involved not couples, at least on a conscious level, who were having issues. It involved 100 happy and very happily married heterosexual couples who were not in therapy, but who consciously or unconsciously may have known that they needed some help in the bedroom. So what were the results of this particular study? Well, 50% of the women had difficulty becoming aroused. And this is in happy and very happily married situations. 46% of the women had difficulty achieving orgasm. 15% of these happy and very happily married women were unable to achieve orgasm under any circumstances at all. And what about the men? Well, 33% of the men experience problems with premature ejaculation, which, by the way, is a very easy problem to resolve. In fact, I can tell you a really cute story. When I lived in Providence, I had a private practice, and there was a young man, and he was 20 years old, and that took a lot of chutzpah. It took a lot of courage for him to call a therapist, and he had a girlfriend, and he was madly in love. And he had an issue with premature ejaculation. So I gave him some advice. There are certain techniques. There's a squeeze technique. There's a stop-start technique. There are some numbing creams. And what he did, he went home, and it was amazing. He masturbated every day for, well, I think 3 or 4 times a day. And he came back a week later after our initial appointment. And he grabbed everything, which was really incredible. And within a week, with a lot of practice, stop, start, squeeze, whatever other things he was doing, he was able to successfully deal with his problem of premature ejaculation. I was blown away, very, very impressed. And what about erectile dysfunction? Well, studies show that 52% of men between the ages of 40 to 70 have reported problems with erectile dysfunction. And if you are one of these people, please, please, please go to your primary care doctor, possibly to a urologist, and find out why it is that you are not having sufficient blood flow to the penis. It's very easy to just be given a prescription for Viagra, Cialis, or Levitra, but getting to the root of the problem is really, really important because you really do want to rule out any cardiac issues. So, without any further ado, I want to introduce my guest, Diana Dubé, who is a psychotherapist in private practice. And Diana, when I was reading about you, you had an affair with President Kennedy, and that's something that would be really interesting to talk about. And Diana recently wrote an amazing column, which is how I found out about Diana in Modern Love, called Why Won't Anyone Help Me in This Sex Shop? So welcome, welcome, Diana Dubé.
Thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be here. And I would love to talk especially about sexuality and sensuality as we age. I'm 83 years old, and I believe incredibly strongly in the self-empowerment that comes with erotic self-knowledge. To me,
Absolutely.
I'm sorry?
No, I'm saying you're absolutely right. And there is this myth, right, that as you get older, that somehow those desires disappear. And of course, you are a perfect, perfect example of someone who's shown that that's really a myth. So I'm sorry for interrupting. Go ahead.
Please. I mean, to me, writing that column in the New York Times about going to a sex shop at the age of 83 was a manifesto. It was a statement of my desire to know myself physically and erotically. And to me, this is an incredibly important part of self-empowerment because we are brought up with the myth that A, we can only be happy when we have a male partner, which of course is nonsense. We are brought up to depend on that male for all of our sexual pleasure, which of course is nonsense. And I mean, I feel that we live in a very I mean, not sex positive society and in an ageist and sexist society as well. And that as older women, we are often treated as if we were disposable or expendable. And I have a very, very sad story from my own life where I learned the power of the culture and the power of these messages because when I was coming up, I had a beloved stepmother. I mean, the kindest, most generous, most lovely woman, and beautifully dressed, and beautifully, her apartment was lovely. She had a farm that was lovely. And after my father died, she married her third businessman. And when he died, she said that life was not worth living without a man, and she tried to kill herself.
Oh, my.
Now, I must tell you, that was so deeply wounding. I mean, I loved her. She was loved. She had children. She had stepchildren. She had friends, you know, all of this and that. And yet, she literally tried to kill herself. And even though she was saved, she was not herself. And she was not happy. And she died, you know, not much further on down the road. So that for me, this tells us that we are in a close to lethal society when we believe these myths. And that as older women, as far as I'm concerned, it is up to us to set a good example. And a good example is to really begin to explore and express and expand our sexuality, which I define as those acts and organs which are mostly focused on orgasm and our sensuality, which, as far as I'm concerned, is a way of being in the world, a way of using erotic energy to create an atmosphere within which we live heightened and delightful lives. I mean,
Diane, excuse me, I was reading an article this afternoon, just looking at what is going on in the bedrooms of Americans. And I just want to read a couple of paragraphs here. So the researcher says, after analyzing the sexual activity of almost 10,000 people over almost two decades, scientists caught a glimpse of American sex lives. So according to a sweeping new study, men and women aged 25 to 34 years are having less sex, especially men. And this is true regardless of sexual orientation. And overall, this particular research documents a rise in sexual inactivity between 2000 and 2018. And on average, one in three men ages 18 to 24 reported no sexual activity in the past year. And I can tell you, in my practice, I see people every age of stage in life, and sex in many, many of the situations with couples almost doesn't exist at all. People are busy and they're on the computer and the technology and they're working and they're running. And I'm seeing over the years that I support what this study has found, is that something has really gone amiss when it comes to Americans and sex and sexuality. And are you finding this as well?
Not so much. I must tell you, not so much. No. In the first place, my practice is maybe 85% people are in the arts. They are creative people. And to me, part of creativity has to do with eroticism, with that heightened sensibility in the world. And I am very aware that there is a way in which there is a flattening. I mean, the television, the texting, the social media, God knows what. It's all about compare. It's all about compete. It's all about who is having the most conspicuously consuming society. And that is not satisfying, but it gets you hooked. You keep thinking the next one, the next thing, the next. I do a lot of work. I have my psychotherapy practice. I work for a foundation. I am part of an activist church. I have my writing, and I get up at 4:30 in the morning, but I'm lucky because I have more time than most people, as I do not drink alcohol, and I do not watch television, and I do not participate in any way in social media. So this allows me to live more directly in my human capacity. I'm not being battered by images of how life is supposed to be or how everybody grinning inanely in their bikinis on a beach or something. I mean, bless everybody for having a holiday. That's nice. But then what? And where is real pleasure? Because exactly. I believe real pleasure comes from within, and there is a motor within us that needs to be turning over, where we are grounded in our five senses: sight, sound, taste, touch, and smell. It's how we know ourselves. It's how we ground ourselves. And as we get older, these senses begin to get sort of worn out a little bit, and we really have to be careful that we keep energizing ourselves through our senses. Uh-huh. So that I I'm sorry, what were you going to say?
No, I was going to say in all possible ways, in all possible ways. You know, I was really curious about something that you said about your stepmother and the message about needing a man. Otherwise, she wanted to die, that she conveyed to you. Did you at any point in your life take that in, or was it something that you were able to dispel of pretty quickly and early on in your life?
The answer is that as far as I'm concerned, I was preoccupied by my need for male approval for far too many years in my life. I mean, I am really sorry about that. Did I ever think I would kill myself? No. That was not on the horizon. But I did feel very much. I mean, I came up in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s before there really was a woman's movement. So that my commitment to female friendship now is so profound. I truly believe my female friends, I mean, I have been engaged for 20 years to a man of whom I am extremely fond, but we do not live together. And to me, the meaning of, I am very focused on emotional closeness, emotional vulnerability, emotional openness, so that I want heart-to-heart communication. Right? I mean, surface to surface is good for missiles. It's not good for human beings. That's all there is to it. So that for me, when you ask about my stepmother, I loved her in so many ways and wanted to be like her in so many ways. And as I say, I think it was part of the culture of my times to be so focused on, you know, did men like me? Was I pretty enough? Was I smart enough or funny enough or God knows what? The power always outside of me, always with other people to decide whether I was, quote unquote, good enough. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. So when and how, because we have a lot of women listeners to this show and also men, when and how were you able to make that transition in terms of your thinking, in terms of what you began to see what was really important and it was not just male approval? How did that process come about for you, Diane? I'm really curious.
Well, I think very slowly is the first way it came about. Super slowly. I mean, you're talking to somebody who just moves at glacier speed. I write at glacier speed. I move at glacier speed. And I must tell you that my life really, really, really began when I was around 60. And I began. Opened my psychotherapy practice. I became engaged to this lovely man. I began writing, I don't know, 10 or 15 years ago. So that for me to be published in the New York Times was miraculous, right?
Right, but it's such a wonderful, wonderful piece. I mean, I have it right in front of me. I mean, the writing was superb. Of course, what you were writing about was just, I think, it was hilarious. It was insightful. You know, for people who may have not read this piece, and everybody that's listening, you've got to go to the archives in the New York Times. It was on June the 27th. Why won't anyone help me in the sex shop? So was it that you decided just that day that you were going to go to this sex shop? How did this all happen, Diana, that you made the decision that day you were going to go and check out all the gadgets?
Well, I had been to a sex shop years before. And, you know, sort of in the flush of women's liberation. And I wasn't going to be oppressed anymore. I was going to go and show that I was a free woman. So I went into a sex shop, and of course, A, I'm nearsighted, so I couldn't see a damn thing. B, I mean, I thought, oh my God, what am I doing here? And I, you know, tried to look cool, got nowhere, and scuttled away as fast as I could go. So that was my first experience in a sex shop. My second experience was when my partner and I were walking down the street, and there was a sex shop with lots of stuff, and I said, what on earth is it? Squinting as usual. Of course, can't see very well. So I get my nose up against the plate glass window, and he says, well, come on, we'll go in. We'll see if there's something there that we would enjoy. Because he is a truly sex positive, I don't know, call him liberated. I mean, he is saying, how do we help each other become our most selves, right? And
I love
for me,
it.
Going to the sex shop this time, it was a friend of mine who said she hadn't been to a sex shop. And I said, well, done. That's it. We're going. Uh-huh. And by this time, I was pretty blind. And so I was, I guess, very blind. And I said, you'll be my eyes and ears. And the point of it was to honor our desire.
Right.
To say that we want to take within us sexual empowerment, sensual empowerment. And whether it is that every time we take a bath, we come out of the bath and massage our legs and feet with luscious cream, or we spray ourselves with oil, our neck and our chest and our breasts and our arms, and we go to bed so that we are smelling divine and we are soft from the bath, and we are going to have very sweet dreams. And the other piece, of course, is how do we prepare ourselves for sex? How do we, I mean, sometimes we may want to listen to Italian opera or to Mozart, or sometimes we may want to listen to a French singer singing wonderfully erotic love songs. Or we want to see an Italian movie and watch Italian men say wonderful things. I mean, they may be saying, gee, we have to go and get the laundry, but in Italian it sounds divine, right?
It sure does.
What do we know about ourselves, and why do we not study ourselves, mm-hmm. right? What is our preparation for an erotic encounter with ourselves or with a partner? I mean, sex for one is wonderful. Sex for two, or if you prefer three or four, please yourself. But what is our self-knowledge? What is the literature that turns us on? What are the paintings in which we see these amazing Renoir women, you know, lusciously reclining on a sofa? I mean, what is it that is visually, what is it that is tactilely, what is it that, what scent encourages us in, oh, yes, I want to breathe more deeply. Yes, I want to rest. I want to relax. I want to open my body. I mean, we can't just, that's one thing if you're 18 or something and you have full flood of hormones. But at 83, I don't have quite so many hormones, I don't think. And I want to prepare myself, right?
And it's wonderful that you have a fiancé. And, of course, it's interesting that you've both chosen to live in separate residences. And do you find that that really adds some sizzle to your life and to your sex life as well?
Well, my fiancé lives in the Berkshires, and he is an actor and a director and a writer, and that is a wonderful center for him. I live in Greenwich Village, and I was born and brought up in New York, so to me, life beyond New York is all one vast wilderness.
Right.
I mean, what's out there? Oh, my God.
You sound like my husband. Okay, I get it. I get it.
And so that I believe that taking our own erotic power, however we want to use it, whether we want to use it sex for one or whether we want to have a partner or two or three, to me, we are freeing ourselves from our the constrictions of a very, very negative culture. And it is really important for us older women to refuse to stay in our places, to go out into the street and stride happily and contentedly down the street. Now, I stride with a side stick, so I'm not really striding all that fast, but it's the attitude. Are we fragrant? Are we energized? Are we rested? Are we curious? What is
it? I'll tell you, Diana, I don't hear, I'm Canadian, live now in New York City. I don't hear women expressing themselves at all like you are describing, which is so luscious, which is so titillating. I don't hear that. I hear people rushing, and yes, we had sex at midnight, but I was so tired, and then I had to check my emails, and then I wanted to see what was on Facebook and how many likes there were, and I mean, I don't hear anybody, and I have a big practice in East Hampton, and here I don't hear anybody describing it like you at all. And you know, I'm constantly getting people to try to just slow down. Not just about sex, but just slow down and smell the flowers. But I think that the results of the Pittsburgh study and this most recent study, I think they really describe what is going on in mainstream America. We're busy. We have forgotten to do all of these things, to take the bath and think about our scent and luxuriate. And fantasize, it's very sad.
And for example, there is this wonderful woman, she wrote Mating in Captivity.
Yes.
Esther Perel, I believe is her name.
Esther Perel, yes.
And in one of her books, she really does this amazing thing where she says, she puts it right out there. How does this man, how is he going to prepare for his encounter with a beloved woman?
Right.
And she describes him spending the day going into different shops in the city to gather the ingredients for a superb meal that he is going to prepare for her. Mm-hmm. He goes and gets Italian bread in one store. He gets a particular kind of prosciutto someplace else. He gets meat at another place. He gets the herbs. He gets, I mean, he looks over the vegetables. But in other words, he spends a few hours simply gathering the ingredients that will become the meal. Well, doing that enlivens his senses. It encourages his fantasies, and I think it is utterly brilliant.
It's such an expression of love. It's, you know, and such an expression of, I care about you, I care about us, I love you, I love us. This is important. You are a priority, we are a priority. You know, I think about the young women. I see a number of young, although I'm just starting to see people in person. I can't stand this Zoom business. I mean, it's been what it's been over the past year. But I see a number of young women in their late 20s and 30s. And these are Harvard MBAs and Wharton MBAs. And I have to tell you, Diana, sex is the last thing. And these many of these young women are in relationships of sorts. It is just not a priority. In fact, the way they express it almost, that it is an intrusion. It is an intrusion in their international call that they have in Spain at 5 o'clock in the morning Spanish time. And that's what I'm hearing and seeing a lot of, even with the younger, highly educated, highly motivated, probably too motivated, when it comes to their work and success and money.
Wow. Tell me more. I mean,
it's very concerning. I mean, it's very, very concerning. I mean, I'll have sessions with these young women. And as I say, most of them have boyfriends. And I would say the lowest priority. And I'm thinking of five or six young women. They're beautiful. They're smart. They're educated. They're lovely. They're nice. Sex is on the lowest rung of their priorities. Their friends going out, drinking, their international calls, you know, the promotion that they're going to get. They just got the Wharton MBA, so they really need to do something spectacular with that. Their relationships are suffering. That is for sure, which is primarily why they call me, not because of typically, you know, their lack of lust or sex lives. And this is the way, I can't generalize and say this entire generation, but certainly the group that I work with, I would say that this is typical, that erotica, I'm not even sure what these young women would know about or would define as erotica.
Well, Beatty, let me ask you another question that follows on for me. What is going to happen when these young people have children?
Yeah.
Because children take time. And if you don't have time for sex, how are you going to have time for children? And well, that's what frightens me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The priorities, I mean, I don't want to make value judgments, but, you know, I'm a mom, I'm a wife, my daughter is 38, she's married, she has a almost four-year-old little boy. I don't know how they're going to juggle all of this when the priorities, in terms of not what they say, but how they live is not really the relationships, and it's really not sex. And children, for this group, it's kind of, maybe at some point in the future, we would like to maybe have children. But they're so running around, Diana, and I feel just in all the wrong directions. To slow down, I see the rates of clinical depression over the top, the rate of anxiety, I mean, just, and people rushing to psychiatrists here, and they want this pill and that pill and this antidepressant and this anti-anxiety. I don't see my group eating well, sleeping well, exercising. It's all about, it seems to be all about, in quotes, success. Their definition of success that is not working for them.
Exactly. I mean, this is late capitalism. This is patriarchy saying, be just like us. If you want to have a good life, women, become like men.
Yes.
Have their priorities, their energy, their way of living.
Right.
And for many men, of course, in this society, I mean, women are for, sort of trophy wives. I mean, what are we talking about? Mm-hmm. it is not about open-heartedness.
Right.
And again, you're seeing a group of people. I mean, many of my clients, of course, are in your age, the age group that you're talking about. I'm really, in this moment, though, thinking very much of older women and how it is up to us to refuse to participate in the roles that have been prepared for us, which is to say, to be disposable people.
Right.
And to live in pleasure, to live in sensuality, to live in erotic energy, which isn't just sexuality, but according to me, should permeate every area of our lives.
Do you see it, though? I mean, I've been in New York now for about 6 years, and I have a really lovely, lovely, I'm thinking, I'm hoping maybe none of them hopefully are listening to the show right now and listening to what I'm going to say. They are lovely, they are smart, they are educated, they are, in quotes, successful. But the last thing, really, Diana, that I would say is that sensuality even plays into any of this at all, or erotica. And in private discussions, and these are women who are in their mostly 50s, 60s, and 70s, and up, what we're talking about is foreign. It is foreign talk. That is not the talk that ever goes on. You know, I'll give presentations on sex or on relationships, and then maybe, you know, we'll talk a little bit about it. But that is not where this group of women is at all, and it's a very vast group. And I'm sure many of the women you probably know. It's just not. That's not part of where they're at. It is not. It is clearly not a priority.
I'm so sorry to hear it.
So am I.
It is not a fulfilled life, according to me.
And according to me, I agree. I absolutely agree. You know, I want to tell you a really cute story that happened to me. I lived in Sarasota, Florida for a number of years, and I had a patient, and her name was Charlotte. Let's call her Charlotte. And she'd lost her husband, and she was really super clinically depressed. Anyways, we worked through all of that. And about a year and a half after her husband died, she had a crush on one of the staff in this assisted living place where she was living. And I was concerned, you know, maybe he was after her money or whatever. Anyways, they actually started to go out, and they actually started to have sex, and she had a lot of physical problems. So I used to come to her because she wasn't able to maneuver very well. So I come into her apartment one day, and she says, "Beatty," she says, "I have to ask you something." She says, "You're the only person that I could ever ask this." I said, "So, Charlotte, what's the question?" She says, "I want you to show me how to give oral sex." I said, "Okay." I said, "You know, just what you're doing with your boyfriend." "Yes, yes." So we go into her kitchen, overlooking the water. She gets out a banana, and I showed her what she should do. She was extremely happy. She had never done this with her husband, and she had been married for, you know, 1,000 years. And she and her actually much younger boyfriend, and I was really concerned, but it turned out it was okay, relationship wise. They had a very satisfying sex life. And when this woman died at 95, Diana, she died with a smile on her face. She was erotic. She was sensual. She dressed beautifully. She put on perfume. She prepared for her dates. Every single thing that you are mentioning. And I had a number of women like that in their 80s and older in Sarasota who somehow they didn't lose this. They felt sexy. They felt sensual, regardless of the physical issues and problems and you know, all kinds of things that, you know, so oftentimes come when we're getting older. And I remember saying to myself, I want to be Charlotte, you know, when I'm 95. I think I will be. I want to be.
I'm, you know, sure you will be.
Well, and you are. Right? You are. So
I am enjoying my life.
It sounds like this. So just kind of getting back to your article for, you know, the few minutes that we have left. So you're saying that nobody approached you in this sex store at all?
Well, you know what? Now that the secret is out, there were people there. But for the story, to me, it was, I sort of emphasized that nobody immediately rushed up and said, how can we help? Now, the fact of the matter is that most sex stores, the people are extremely kind and extremely accommodating, and we can expect to have a wonderful conversation and people showing us what might interest us. The point of it is often less, I mean, of course it's nice to have a new toy or a gadget or something. The real conversation is within ourselves.
Right.
Where we will say, yes, mm-hmm. I want to explore myself. I want to explore my physicality, my sexuality. I want to know myself. I mean, every great philosopher forever has said, know thyself.
Right.
And that means more than just know what I think about the Berlin Wall. I mean, it means that we know our spirit. And I don't think we can know our spirit unless we know our bodies, unless we know what delights us and what mm-hmm. pleases us. Do you? I mean, do you think
I agree? I agree with you. I agree with you totally. You know, I was a spokesperson for a penis pump manufacturer company for a number of years and for another company. And it's funny, I have all these gadgets, you know, around the house. I really do. I was looking in one of my walk-in closets and I thought, good God, I've got all these boxes. But you know, I'm lucky that my husband and I, we really prioritize, you know, sensuality and sexuality, and that we slow down. We slow down to be able to
Absolutely.
Find the time to have some intimate moments. I mean, not just physically, sexually intimate moments, but, you know, just a connection. And
right.
I think that's something that has to happen. We just need to slow down a little bit and just kind of stop and take in, you know, there's beauty around us. And I think that we're so oftentimes, you know, obsessed with all the negativity and everything that's wrong and the competition and the social media that we're missing opportunities that you speak about in your article. It was so beautifully written, Diana. I mean, really, you're quite a writer.
Oh, Beattie, thank you so very much. I mean, it's been a pleasure to talk to you, and I'm so glad that you read the article and called me up.
Well, absolutely. Listen, we need to meet. I'll come to you. I'd love to
wonderful.
Meet you.
Absolutely anyway, wonderful.
Thank you again. And thank you so much, Diana. And I will definitely be in touch. That's a promise. Okay?
Wonderful. Okay.
Take care.
Thank you.
Have a good rest of the day.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye. This is Diana DeVay. What an absolutely lovely, lovely woman. She really knows about life. She really knows about priorities, you know, and just being able to stop and enjoy the beauty around us, the beauty, you know, from within. And, you know, for those of you who may have never been in a sex shop, it's amazing all of the different gadgets that you can look at and that you can actually try. I mean, not just, you know, for your sexual energy, but a lot of these massagers can really help you to relax and also help you to slow down and also help you to be able to come, you know, much, much, much more in touch with your own body. And I think with the craziness and the frenzy of life, particularly in the big cities, particularly here in New York City, I think that we need to do everything that we possibly can, again, to do things that are really in our best interest, and sensuality and erotica, whether or not you have a partner or you don't have a partner, it really does enhance our way of life. It just makes life a lot more, I think, freer and beautiful. So if you haven't yet visited a sex shop, there are a lot of different sex shops here and certainly in New York City, you should give yourself permission, and you might discover that you are going to have a lot of unexpected fun and unexpected pleasure. Well, it's just amazing, you know, when you have a terrific guest, you know, we can talk, and there's so many other things that I would really like to discuss with Diana about relationships and about erotica. But an hour has basically come and gone here on the Ask Beatty Show. And I always appreciate, you know, hearing from you. I love getting your emails and your comments. And, you know, during the show, it would be also great to have you call sometime, and we can discuss and we can debate the different issues that, you know, that I deal with on a weekly basis. So, again, I really want to thank you all for listening over the years. You know, I've been doing the Ask Beatty Show here on the Progressive Radio Network. It's about 6 years, and we talk about everything. We talk about relationships, we talk about sex, we talk about all kinds of mental health issues. And I think that in life, these are really the priorities, you know, being good to ourselves, doing what is actually in our best interest, and slowing down. And, you know, the old saying, giving ourselves permission to really smell the roses. So again, thank you so much again for listening every week. And I want to leave you with my two weekly messages. And of course, the first one is to do everything that you can possibly do to be good to yourself and to live life in ways that are in your best interest. And of course, the second message is that we all need to continue to do a much, much, much better job in learning to love each other. So goodbye, everybody. I will talk with you next week and every week live Monday from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on the Ask Beatty Show on the Progressive Radio Network. So have a good rest of the day, and I'll talk with you next week. Goodbye, everybody.